that $50 million would yield? How much was a little less? I don't think anybody in this room does. I don't think anybody in the world does. Because we didn't have an accurate roadmap to start with. But again, as I was starting to say, this model is only as good as the mind and the human subjective judgment that is applied to it for forecasting. That's where the outside advisory group comes in.
Senator Trump.
How many assumptions are we putting into the econometric model?
The number of assumptions. Perhaps we should, you're getting into the model per se, Mr. Chairman. Ed has.
Okay.
Yeah,
Sway.
Really.
Is that okay, Senator Trill?
Yeah.
I think it will come.
So we get to the guts of the model.
Yeah. Because the point I want to make is that I think all of the assumptions, assume that there are quite a number of them that are put in, are also the weighting of the assumptions is known by this group of experts, and the equations are checkable and so forth.
Absolutely.
All of that is out. And before, with the other system, we really only got a very vague statement about assumptions. We never really saw them. We never saw the weighting of them or the equations or anything. So at least this is a checkup system to look at.
This will make 90 experts, right?
No, it won't. But it will make it possible. It will make it possible for each one of you to understand what the assumptions are in common language. And assuming some buildup of experience of the real technical experts on the conversions that these formulae provide, you know what it is you're assuming and basing your decisions on.
Assumptions are clearly laid out.
Plain language.
Actual numbers and the arithmetic process by which you go from those assumptions to results is clear and open. And if you do the same assumptions a second time, you get the same results.
But if you change assumptions, you're going to get different results. There's another thing I'd like to say about this. These models raise more questions than they provide answers. But that's good.
Sure.
That is good. They do raise more questions if you sit and think about them. That's exactly what we want.
Senator Hanlon.
Bob, you said the end product of this would be very thick. Is there going to be any sort of condensation? We don't have time for this.
Oh, certainly. There will be a narrative condensation in every one of them, where it's a page or two or three saying basically what the changes are that we're assuming, the assumptions, what the economy is, the standard economist kind of.
I looked at some of this, and that doesn't mean anything to me.
Oh, that's a list of equations. You should have been sitting in with the governor's council yesterday, and these guys checking all these equations, you know, and I'm sitting there, oh, yeah, I turned to the page, oh, that's nice. I finished my math with trigonometry in high school, and wasn't even very good at that. But they can talk those languages. Mr. Chairman, if you wish, I think it would be most helpful to the committee if Ed Moscovich explained what DRI is, what they do, what other states do, and how our model is composed here. This morning we kind of ran out of time with the House committee, and we agreed to come back after we have the actual forecast to hear from Chang to actually look at it. We have the preliminary one for you, or did. I'll bring it again if you want to see it. But, I think we can use. You can best be served now if I shut up and let Ed tell you what's
Ed.
Going on.
Well, I'd like to just give you a brief word of introduction about DRI, and then talk about the forecasting system that has been installed in Oregon. DRI was founded in 1968, actually early '69, when voters sent Otto Eckstein back from the Council of Economic Advisors to Cambridge. And he set up a firm to forecast the U.S. economy. And he had the insight that the tools he needed to forecast the economy, that is a big model and a computer and a language to talk to the computer with and lots of data, those same tools could be used by any of his clients to do their own forecasts. So although we do produce a U.S. forecast, our real business is in helping our clients to produce their own forecasts of revenue, in your case, or car sales in General Motors, or bank deposits, or whatever.
General Motors or Chrysler?
I don't know that Chrysler's a client, but they were. We once did some work for New York City, and still haven't paid for it. I don't go marketing down there. We, as a matter of fact, we have talked with General Motors in the last couple of weeks about a forecast of car sales by length by state. And I'm not sure, well, I know there is an interesting question as to whether they think they're going to get smaller or not. Anyway, it is a slightly different perspective. That is that we're trying to help our clients arrive at forecasts that the clients themselves have confidence in. And to that end, we produce four different forecasts every month, that is with different scenarios and different assumptions, and clients who don't like any of those four forecasts are free to take our model and solve it themselves. This morning we got in a lot of questions about the structure of the DRI model. I hesitate to give an exposition on it since it's 800 equations, but if there are a couple things you want to know about how it works, I'd be glad to answer questions about it.
Will there be 800 equations for Oregon's part of the model?
No, there are, what is it, 130?
140.
140. Well,
each equation not necessarily being an assumption. Because you have some that are actual numbers. Well, that would also be an assumption, I guess. Well, each equation would have to have some estimated figure applied to it, would it not?
Well, that's a good question. There's two kinds of assumptions, at least, when you model. There are times when two different formulations fit history equally well. Or sometimes when, if you look at a longer interval, you get a different number than if you look at a shorter interval. And in those cases, which equation you use is in fact a matter of judgment, which in a way is an assumption. For example, we started out by using not really the Portland CPI, but we used the ratio of the Portland to the US CPI to get a sense of the cost of living in Oregon. Fit more or less well historically, but it gave some ambiguity in forecast. And looking at the results, your CPI soared in 1980 because of the high cost of mortgages. And if everybody had bought a new house every month, and particularly if they had bought it from someone who didn't live in Oregon and couldn't keep the income here, then I suppose it would have given plausible results. But looking at income in that way suggested a downturn in sales that didn't quite happen. So we used a different specification which assumed that despite the published data, Oregon prices really moved more like the rest of the country. In a way, that was kind of clear-cut. So I don't know whether you want to call that an assumption or not. But there is a lot of judgment that can go into just fitting equations.
Sure, I think they're assumptions.
Okay.
I mean, it's not... It's likely to be wrong by at least some degree.
Yeah, that one I haven't had a lot of confidence in because I spent 2 or 3 days on it myself and thought about it a lot. But yes, it's an assumption. The second kind of assumption is, as you forecast, you compare the results of a particular equation. Well, you can look at the equation backwards. You know, look at its performance the last 2 years and see how well it would have done. And sometimes it doesn't do very well. Or like your lumber industry, you lost 12,000 workers in the second quarter of 1980. But the historic relationship between your employment and housing starts nationally suggests you should have lost about 5,000. And that gap of 7,000 workers stayed throughout 1980. So we had to make an assumption, one way or another, about whether either you were going to recover your previous share or you weren't. And Chang and I guessed the other night that you weren't. And then we talked it over with the advisors yesterday who said, yeah, that was probably the right assumption. So there's that kind of assumption. Both the equations themselves can be based on assumptions of most reasonable fit and certainly applying them.
Okay. Now, when we're looking at this summary, when we see says education or manufacturing or mobile homes, does that mean the production and sales?
It means employment.
Employment, strictly employment in those fields.
Chang and I spent about a day in Boston at the very beginning trying to see if we believed the output numbers from the survey of manufacturers, and we finally decided we didn't. You couldn't believe both the output numbers from the survey and the employment numbers from your employment service. The two did not move in reasonable relationship one with the other.
So you got these from the employment service? Okay. And how did you check the comprehensiveness of the list? Did you do that through by relying on the employment service? Or
I'm lost. The comprehensiveness.
Well, how comprehensive? What's left out here?
Well, nothing. I mean,
how do you know?
Oh, because there's an equation which adds it all up, and we compare the equation that adds it all up with the known total. You run a report where you check the accuracy of all the equations, and it's just as important to check that the identities are in fact identities. Every once in a while that happens. You write an equation for total wage disbursements, and in one state we left out finance, insurance, real estate, and it turned out, of course, you could see it.
Okay.
There it was, that it didn't add up right.
Senator Trump?
I guess maybe that's the answer to what I was going to ask. But how do you know for sure that there aren't 160 assumptions you ought to have in rather than 140? Is that the same answer that you just gave?
No, the answer I just gave is how do you know that you've added everything up right?
Okay.
You produce something, we call it a null report, where you solve each equation historically, one at a time, for the last 3 or 4 years. And then you look at the historical, what the equation would have produced, and you look at the actual, and if in some cases you know that they were identities, they must be exactly equal, or you've made an adding mistake.
Or you've left something out.
That's right. In other cases, well, right, because the machine does always add, right? The other thing is sometimes it just doesn't fit very well. The lumber example is one. Another one we ran into was that for some reason or other in 1979 your livestock production rose relative to national, and it's stayed up all this time, 2 years.
So you said that on the national level you have 800 different assumptions.
No, 800 equations.
800 equations. I said you have 140 equations. How many assumptions? Is each equation an assumption?
In part.
Yeah. I suppose so.
Or more. Yeah. I guess the question is, again, how do we know for sure that we've got everything, that we're evaluating everything we should be evaluating? Maybe we can't know that.
Well,
but you must have a good feeling that you're getting most everything.
Only time will prove whether or not the system, the number of equations, and the degree of breakout is big enough to satisfy our demand for accuracy.
And I can see what you've done is you've gone back and tested the model against the previous years, and if it comes
right.
close, well, you assume you're right on.
Well, there's a number of checks. That's one. Another thing that we do, and that report doesn't quite reflect it, take the major parts of the model and compare the Oregon forecast with the national. And it doesn't mean that Oregon has to be the same, but you have to make sure that you can explain any difference from national growth rates, that you know why it differs and that that's a plausible difference. Another kind of check which you can do there is you can look at the performance of the forecast over the forecast interval with performance over the same part of the business cycle. I mean, you look at 1975 and then look at 1980, which are both recession bottom years, and you'll see that, as I remember, Oregon did a little better than the country in 1975, partly because you had a good farm year. You do worse than the rest of the country in 1980. First of all, you didn't have a good farm year, and second of all, you lost those seven. Not only did you lose the regular housing workers for lumber, but the other 7,000. Then you look at the recovery, and as I remember, our 1981 forecast is something like 1 or 2% real growth, and then the 3 or 4% that the tentative forecast has growing in the early part of the 80s, it just makes sense. The national is not as high as it was in 79. Therefore, you wouldn't expect Oregon to get the 4, 5, 6% growth you had. I mean, you use your common sense to look at the aggregates, and you look at the individual ones. And between looking at the reasonableness of the aggregate ones and the structure of the individual ones, you make your best guess and you come out. But there are, it isn't as if there's a checklist of 160 and you can't look at the overall results and think about it.
Okay, did you have more on the internal
workings
of the forecast?
What I was going to stress, and I think we've pretty much said this, is that in a sense you've got a forecasting system where you can change your national assumption, or you can pick your national assumption, run it through your model. You can, in fact, make alternate assumptions about Oregon. I mean, you could assume that those workers come back, 7,000 workers. You could hypothesize a disastrous wheat crop.
Okay. I have one question here. I was going to save it for Dr. Son, but since we're in a related field, let me ask it. We're dealing here primarily with employment. Do you take... Have even international problems, potential problems, been taken into account? They have. You can modify if there's an oil embargo or something like that. You can instantly plug that into the computer and say, well, this is going to slow things down and that sort of thing.
You might want to trace how that would happen. If you hypothesize another oil embargo, if there didn't happen to be a simulation of it that we prepared, you can take our model and increase the price of petroleum and resolve our model.
Okay.
And
okay.
What that'll do, it will...
you're going to have to be doing that every week now. So.
It raises prices. It promotes a collision between the economy and the money supply, which will raise interest rates, which will cut back housing starts. You can then run that simulation through the Oregon model. You'll have fewer housing starts, you'll have less lumber nationally, you have less lumber employment, you'll have higher prices, so on and so forth, and it'll all work its way through to your taxes.
That just verifies what Bob was telling us about being...
Thanks, Andy.
We rehearsed that carefully to get it just...
What you say there about plugging in some factor, some assumption, I judge that you'll be able to determine here what effect that would have on a variety of fronts.
Yes.
Could this model be used, for example, if we were debating a tax program? I assume, from what you say, correct me if I'm wrong, that you could tell what effect that would have on certain segments of the economy. Could you tell us what effect that would have on certain groups of people?
I think
age groups or people in a certain segment of the economy?
I think we have those models. Staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but we have several models existing. Well, I guess you wouldn't call them all models, but some formula.
Well, basically a simulation process of what's going to happen when you change the tax law, what that's going to do, but that doesn't really relate to this kind of model.
Well,
that was my question.
Whether you can measure the economic effects
upon certain groups of people.
There's two kinds of ways I can interpret that question. I think the answer is quite different. One that my clients in Illinois ask me a lot is, if we pass the bill that decreases the personal property tax on corporations for inventories, how many new businesses will come to our state? I guess it's possible to get an equation for that. I'd be careful about believing it. I have a sort of bias that, in fact, those tax changes do make some difference, but to quantify them reliably is awfully difficult. We have played around with that, and our Wisconsin model suggested, some specific responses. The Governor Lucey was convinced that the rather strange-looking American Motors Corporation car in the late 60s was only built in Wisconsin because of his tax changes. And that was somewhat confirmed. But when you do it one state at a time, you always kind of wonder about the consistency of it. We're planning over the next year or so to put in place a system which consistently estimates national share of activity. In other words, all the states together. So one state's gain is another state's loss. The second way to interpret your question is, could you, if the governor's tax plan changes, would we be able to say which income groups impact? And the answer is yes. The way the income tax model is set up, it specifically models the number of recipients in each of 10 different income classes. And it forecasts the percentage of those who itemize and the percentage who take the standard deduction. And it forecasts the average itemized deduction, and then it applies the tax law to them. So that, yes, if you change the tax law, we would explicitly, the way we would estimate the impact of the tax law change is to build it up by income class. And that detail is certainly available.
Thank you.
Senator Day.
If we were to take certain actions, the federal government takes certain actions for investment credits, the direct line for reinvestment, you surely can show us some sampling on that.
Yes. Yes, sure.
And with some predictability.
Yes. I've personally done that with our national model.
How about personal savings?
Yes. Sure. That works through the DRI national model.
I figured.
Right.
Senator Trump.
Is our model very, very much like the models in other states?
Do we have
more advanced models, more retarded models, old models, new models? Or keep them all up to date? Is whenever some improvement in the art comes along, all the states that have these models do the same?
Well, that's up to them. I mean, they're their models.
You're advising, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But some take our advice and some don't.
Do we have a Cadillac Buick or Chevrolet?
Well, since your model is brand new, it's a Cadillac. And I guess, what can I say? I mean, it's a question. I think that my client in the state, who I won't mention, who ignores my advice, has allowed his model to become a Chevrolet over time. But, of course, he thinks it would have become a Chevrolet if he'd taken my.
The modeling is a dynamic thing. We've got to constantly keep working with it. To answer your question, you have the cost benefit. Do we want more than 140 equations? Maybe we want 9,000 equations. Well, that's just more cost. But really, how much are you going to pay for what is an incremental improvement in accuracy or something else?
Bob,
could I just add one thing? We do learn all the time, and we do. I think our models get better, and our clients all certainly are aware of the kinds of improvements we've made, and many of them incorporate them.
It would be kind of dangerous, wouldn't it, for some state to develop its model and then go off on its own and lose out in what the science.
I think so.
And one thing that has come up repeatedly, Senator Day asked, does California have one? Yes, they do, but they're a different animal. You know, they talk with the federal government with their problems. But both Idaho and Washington have models, and coincidentally they are tied in with DRI, and the principals who run these models for In Each House or know each other as people. Chang has traveled to both Boise and Olympia, and there is some talk from the person from Idaho of trying to get PNRC money to set up a regional model. Well, now that PNRC is dead as the dodo bird, that may not happen. But certainly the cooperation and the sharing of knowledge will get better with each passing month.
Washington has a model. How far off are they?
Oh, he takes my advice on format, but since he's been doing this for about 6 or 7 years, basically runs the model himself, and I don't know. I'm sure he'd be glad to tell you.
They're borrowing money for their general fund now. So, I don't know.
Budget.
I think they're bigger spenders. If you want to know the truth, they're restrained on spending. It's some of their problem. Well, Bob, you and I have been involved in budgets for years together. Are you more satisfied? Are you comfortable with the direction we're going?
Absolutely.
Because I know for years this is just something new to you. You've advocated this for some time.
Well, not really. Not for some time. It's like the automated budget information system. I got a reputation for hating computers around this state.
You have right to for all the turkeys you gave us. going back to more vehicles.
I didn't give those to you. No, I didn't.
Well,
but anyway, you know, but the use of computers and, more importantly, the proportion of what I've always thought of for 20 years in this business of computer con men, somebody who learns some of the jargon and goes out and peddles a great, huge idea, the proportion of those that are in the business now is greatly reduced. You've got some very competent professionals. We've got them right in this state. So, fine, I've been pushing the development of computer-based information systems for about 4 or 5 years. Ed Moskovich, I've known him for years through the National Association of State Budget Officers. He'd been talking to me, you know, and so forth and so on. I didn't move on this thing until, and long before we had a revenue shortfall, I says, my God, we just don't know enough. We're talking about a magnitude of $3 billion. This isn't any little glitch. You just miss a few percentage points and we're dead in the water.
Well, of course, in previous years, we didn't have the dramatic alterations either. That's why the method we were using, we've had some problems where we had to adjust, but you didn't have the dynamics that you see occurring.
Paul, on the average, has been perfect. Some biennia he's been over, some biennia he's under. Same thing's going to happen with this model. You know, that's inevitable. That's the only thing that protects us.
Nothing prevents us on the, because the regional commission's going to, nothing would prevent us from signing an agreement with the three states to do the damn thing if we wanted to do a Northwest review. And I would think that'd be an extension of probably where you want to go.
I think so. And again, though, I want to, if I'm involved in it, I want to do it deliberately and not any big flash in the pan thing, and broaden out the knowledge so everybody knows what's going on.
Chang, have you visited these other states? Is that correct?
Yes, Washington. I did.
Do you know how far off Washington was? Do you have an answer to that, or do you know? Are they off because of over? I mean, not following the advice, I guess is what I'm asking.
No.
Or do you know?
I don't know.
That's an honest answer. You're one of the few.
Again, when you're making a quarterly forecast, you got to say, you know, compared to what they, we all on an annual, they're on a biennial budget basis up there. So, in any of this business, the longer you look out.
Well, Idaho's on a biennial too, aren't they?
I'm not sure. I think they're annual now.
They're
straight annual.
Well, they busted into a 1% limitation too, which is complicated. What they're. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There. Dr. Song, did you have something to add at this point to the discussion?
We will. They'll take you through the model specifically, if that's what you want. The structure of the model, this is the preliminary. When you see the final one, it will come out, because we've been unable to be different in some of the indices, and we'll have a revenue model affixed to it and a narrative description. When you see it again, but if you wish, just to build up your understanding of the kind of information, both historical and futuristic, that is included in there.
There is no bottom line in this one?
There is no revenue forecast in that one, no sir.
Did you, in February, you undoubtedly spit one out?
At the end of February, yes, that is a separate model. That's the tax yield model, and through all of these other groups, we don't want them worrying about what that's going to be as a bottom line. We want them to tell us what the economy is going to be.
Do you have a figure?
No. They were running it again last night. They were meeting from 11 to 12 with the Department of Revenue to check out that some of their yield information. We wasted a whole day of work here for Chang appearing for a revenue committee. He should be back there playing with his computer.
Not wasted.
Of course. I misspoke.
Yes, you really did.
But no, we literally, we will go back and look at the assumptions again. Rick Gold from DRI will be out tomorrow to work with us. He's going up to Olympia tomorrow. And we'll go back through it. Sometime next week, we will push the button and produce a report.
Well, your information on the electronics industry is quite correct, because they are so boxed in down there. I just spent a week and a half down that area. There's no question that Washington and Oregon are going to reap some mighty benefits, because they have nowhere to go.
There's one other thing that I keep reading in the papers that you don't have in your model, and that's just gas and oil exploration. We got so doggone many permits where they run in here with an oil rig, and we're going to pick up some income tax from that. I'm sure it's not enough to measure in the model, but just the exploration, we haven't hit much.
One thing you ought to know about natural gas, do you realize that Oregon produces 25% of their use right today from those missed wells?
I did.
They do?
Is that high?
That's right.
Good Lord.
The missed well?
The Mist Well is totally consumed by one industry.
I didn't say that. I'm saying that the production that fine produces would supply 25% of our needs, not that we're using it necessarily. Okay? That's what I've been told.
The Mist Well would supply 25% of all the total demand for natural gas in Oregon right now. That's far from what I've heard. I've heard it just barely runs the fertilizer manufacturing outfit.
They've got several.
We're doing some for a pipeline across the eastern Oregon. Yeah, that reason. We're building a major pipeline across eastern Oregon just to work on that.
Yeah, that really surprised me because I went to a deal where the guy from that organization had pie charts and everything.
Well, I'm just that's the information. Sure. And they're building a pipeline.
To get your answer to the question about the tax model, I mean, mechanically it runs, and there'll be numbers soon.
Dr. Son, anything you wanted to add to this discussion?
Well, if it is permissible, I'd rather wait until we